talking about what matters to you this morning. Wake up with Bill Finch. WICC 695.9, the voice of Connecticut.
And welcome to Wake Up, your radio home for truth, justice, and democracy. If you're tired of being divided and manipulated, if you're tired of the right-wing screamers and whiners of talk radio, tired of the political violence, but you want to do something about it, this show is for you. Wake Up is 1 hour every Sunday morning where Connoisseur Media allows me and Melissa Kane, my new co-host, this 1 hour to bring you guests that will provide not only the information you need, but a patriotic, full-throated endorsement of the pillars of American democracy and red meat for the ideals that built this great nation.
Bill, I couldn't agree with you more. If you feel that our government and our country are almost unrecognizable right now, I think you're in the right place. Let's face it, our democracy is under threat right now. As we've seen this week, political violence is very much and very dangerously on the rise. And our safety, our civil rights, our voting rights, our reproductive rights, the right to free and fair elections, it to the independent media and academic freedom are under threat. Parts of this country are quite literally being occupied by the federal government as we speak. So people, we have to push back. We have to stand for what's right and for the rule of law. We need to be a peaceful resistance. And in order to do that, we need to be informed. And that is what I love about this show and why I joined Bill, because every Sunday we feature voices that keep us informed and educate us for what lies ahead. So, Bill, this morning is no exception. Can you tell us a little bit about who we're speaking to this morning?
Well, we have two guests that are going to be joining us from Washington, D.C. They're going to be using aliases because we know this administration has been vengeful toward people who criticize them. But they've been living on the occupied streets of Washington, D.C., and we're all really curious, I think, right, Melissa, to find out what's it like to live in,
I'd like to know. I think I told you my daughter moved to D.C. just over a year ago, and she absolutely loves living there. And she
It's such a beautiful city.
A beautiful place if you love history.
It seems like
love
they're ruining
country,
it with all this military.
It feels like it's being ruined. And she is someone who has always made friends with people. What I love about it, and my hope for this generation is being able to speak to, and live with, and break bread with people of all different political, I'll say persuasions, but I mean perspectives. And that's something that she's really done. And I think when you live like that, you live your life like that, and you start taking a walk along the mall, and all of a sudden you see the National Guard looking, as she has said, pretty miserable to be there, it changes how you feel about where you live. It changes how you feel about how you're living. So, I'm interested to speak with these people. And I know, Bill, that they both have, I believe they're longtime D.C. residents who have some experience in government.
Well, I think we'll let them speak for themselves and what their experience
fair.
Is. But, yeah, you're right. It's got to be weird. I remember when I was in college, my friends, there was lots of political violence in Rome at the time, and they went to Rome, and I asked them, and some went to Mexico City, and I asked them what it was like, and they said there were carabinieri's or whatever
everywhere.
They're called, everywhere with submachine guns, machine guns,
you get off
tanks.
The airport, they're people with machine guns. It's a different feeling.
We've been lucky. I know that the political violence on both sides, left and right, has been terrible. It's been something I know that you've been racked by, I've been racked by. Tell me a little bit about how you felt about this political violence recently.
Well, I mean, so you know that I am involved with, I'm the chair of Connecticut Against Gun Violence, and I will say as an organization.
Which
Connecticut Against Gun Violence, which is very much against gun violence and working to end gun violence in the state of Connecticut. But I would say that we, as an organization, are 100% against any kind of political violence of any kind, full stop. No one.
The irony is, this political violence
is gun violence.
You know, I hate to even tread on this because people are so hot over this, but the irony is that if our way of gun control worked, Charlie Kirk may be alive.
That's a very good point.
And he fought for the guns, the gun ownership that actually ended his life. And it's a sad irony. No one wants to see this happen. You know, Bernie Sanders had a great, if you're on the internet, look up Bernie Sanders' statement about the assassination. It was a gruesome event in our nation's history. It was terrible. But, you know, Bernie Sanders, who has absolutely nothing in common with Charlie Kirk, doesn't agree with anything he says, was terrified by it and said we have to be able
to
talk to
one ideology.
Another.
It has to do with allowing for all ideologies and not increasing violence,
ideologies. Unfortunately, the New York Times today has a banner headline about how Trump is not interested in unifying the country.
Right.
And I think that's his biggest failing. I mean, I could go on for years about Donald Trump's failings as an American, as a patriot, but I won't, because everybody's read them already.
Right.
And if you're not disgusted by it, you never will ever be.
I thought that the governor of Utah had some interesting and really good and sort of, you know, unifying things to say. But look, I'm not going to whitewash who Charlie Kirk was. Mm-hmm. I am so against what happened to him. I grieve for his family.
Oh, it's just terrible.
I hate gun violence. I hate political violence. But I think it's important that people not feel like they have to shy away from the type of damage that his type of political speech did inflict on many people. Again, we're a free country. We should be a free country. We have a First Amendment, and he has had every right and has every right to say what he does. But I don't think we need to apologize for recognizing the very real harm that some of the things he inflicted on marginalized and vulnerable people, many of whom, you know, we care very deeply
about.
Some
of our family members.
Yeah,
he wants to make non-persons.
Right. His death was completely undeserved. His family should not have to endure the loss. And yet, we're not going to whitewash the truth of his legacy. That is how I personally feel. I feel like his words reveal.
And his legacy should include the fact that he was devout to his faith, that he loved his wife and his children, and he was, by all outward appearances, a wonderful person personally. And that, I think, you know, today, I was talking to you before the show that the Vatican and Disney had a show about grace, and it was 300,000 people at the Basilica in Rome, and it was so moving. I urge everyone to watch it. And Pharrell and others made these passionate pleas, John Legend, to come together as people and to realize that when we communicate.
Where did you see this? It sounds amazing.
It's on Disney. It's on ABC.
On Disney.
It's amazing.
So you can stream it? We can just all watch this?
Everyone should watch it. It lifts you up. And the message was that we need to be the light, share our light with others, and those other lights that we share with back to us will help inform us all and be better people. And I thought it was beautiful because, you know, the biggest disturbing factor for us, Melissa, as good, loyal, liberal Democrats who like to compromise and get things done, is that we're not fighting within the 100 yards of the football field anymore. We're up with Donald Trump fighting drunk Jet fans in the cheap seats.
You have said that.
And it's an apropos analogy, right?
I do agree.
So we're going to have to break here for we're running a little late this morning. We're going to have to break here. We have our guests online, Brian and Maria from Washington, Maria Smith and Brian Muldoon. As I said, they are using aliases so as not to have any fear of retribution. And Paul's going to take us to some commercials, and then we're going to be right back to hear from the eyewitnesses of what it's like to live on the armed streets of Washington, D.C.
An hour of Bill's thoughts on what's going on in Connecticut. Wake up with Bill Finch, only on WICC 600 and 95.9, the voice of Connecticut.
And welcome back to Wake Up, and we'll redo that intro to include the wonderful and talented Melissa Kane, the co-host of Wake Up, whenever we get to that housekeeping task. But Melissa Kane is here in the studio, and we're joined by Maria Smith and Brian Muldoon, as I said, aliases who avoid any retribution against them for what they may say about the conditions of armed encampment in Washington, D.C. Before we get to that, I just want to let you know that this is personal for Melissa. She may not share this, but her daughter lives in Washington, D.C., and she's very concerned about the conditions her daughter lives under, and she's going to be visiting her next week and maybe reporting on the show.
I can report from the show.
Yeah, yeah. So we're all concerned about our nation's capital. Brian, I want to go to you first. Brian, tell us a little bit about yourself. I know Melissa wants to follow up with a whole bunch of questions.
1982, pretty much. I was a messenger for many years. I'm now, you know, professional here. And, you know, the streets are my home, D.C. So, you know, that's about it about me.
Well, Brian, first of all, hello.
Good morning. You bicycle all over D.C., I understand.
Yeah,
Sorry.
Go ahead, Brian.
Well, no, I was just going to say, as a messenger, it's my safe place downtown. I know it. I lived on the streets there for when I first got here. So, it's my comfort zone. So, yeah, I do bike a lot, 100 and something miles a week.
Wow.
And you're in and out of neighborhoods. So you're seeing where I'm guessing, is the presence consistent throughout? Are there neighborhoods where there's more guard presence?
Not at all. The presence, the National Guard presence, is basically in the tourist areas. So if you go down the Ellipse and the reflecting pool and all that, they're all around there between the Washington Monument and Lincoln. And, and between there and the Capitol. So they got a large presence. So, that's where all the news is. There's a lot of news cameras set up there. So it's all a show.
Right.
It's not where the crime is it?
Right.
Well, look at, so I saw, they have them at the strategically placed at the metros around there, too. So I was biking on the mall one day and I saw like 15 federal cops, like different agencies, Homeland, Drug Enforcement. And the National Guard was there. They were called in to back up the police. That's what they do. They're basically just a backup, show of force. And it turns out, I found out later what was going on, is like you have these local kids living in poverty that they go down to the various monuments and they sell water. And they don't even sell it for that expensive. You can get it cheaper off of them.
I've bought it from them.
right. So you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
And so apparently they went after one of those guys and he fought back. And so there was like Homeland Security involved in that. I mean, it's ridiculous.
Seems a little bit like an overreaction.
Well, it's all a show. I wouldn't say,
Yeah.
I mean, it's really just a show of force for, the people who really don't know what's going on.
Let me ask you, do you feel in any way has the National Guard's presence made the city feel safer?
Well, only in the sense, and I'm not so much as the National Guard, because, a lot of the people who live here in D.C. don't go down to the tourist areas a lot. But, people are afraid to go outside, so that's it. So the traffic is down. I was out walking around yesterday. I mean, there's like, half of the people that are normally there are inside, so.
And you bring up an interesting point, Brian. I know Maria Smith, her alias, wants to talk about the impact of not only the National Guard, but the massive layoffs in Washington, the effect on real estate, the effect on restaurants, the effect on traffic. Maria, are you there?
Yeah. Hi, Bill. Hi, Melissa. How are you?
We're good. It's really great to have you with us.
Thanks. So, I'm going to echo a little bit of what Brian said, but I also want to say that for me, I find the National Guard presence particularly disturbing. Yes, it's performative. I agree. It is designed to intimidate us as we go about our daily lives. And while they're in the tourist areas, they're also in areas that you wouldn't consider to be high crime. So 2 weeks ago, I was having dinner outdoors at a very upscale DC restaurant in the DuPont Circle area on 14th Street. And every 5 minutes, three and four deep, National Guard folks walking by my outdoor table.
That sounds romantic.
Pleasant. I'm not gonna and to hear the response to them, which I heard everything from "go home" to "go home," word I can't say on the radio, to "free DC," to "take your mask off."
These are just to be clear. This is what people on the street are saying in response to seeing the National Guard in areas like DuPont Circle, in areas like tourist destinations.
In areas. So for me, we were in Le Diplomate. Have your daughter take you there or take your daughter there.
I've been there. I love Le Dip.
I love Le Dip, right? So, I go there.
It's an unsolicited endorsement here, courtesy of Connoisseur Media.
It's not an endorsement, but I go there. I know the staff there. you know, there's a lot going on in D.C. with that restaurant group being the subject of labor protests, right?
Yeah.
But when I go there, I expect to enjoy myself, and I don't want to see the
machine guns,
you know, this show of intimidation.
Yeah.
And, you know, the same last week, I went to go to my favorite independent bookstore in DuPont Circle. I get off the metro.
What's the name of that wonderful store? Not
Tramer's.
It's been there forever. Yeah, it's a wonderful place.
Yes. And there's three National Guards people just standing there on the metro station, like at the top.
It's bizarre. It sounds bizarre.
It's bizarre. And it is designed to intimidate.
You know, I have to say, Maria, I'm a guy, so it may be different, but I've never felt threatened in Washington. I've always felt safe.
And as a New Yorker, every time I'm in Washington, I'm
you
like,
feel
this
safer
is like
than
being in the countryside. It's lovely.
I think,
Maria, we have so much we want to talk to you about, including, you know, how the deployment without local consent feels to you. But I want you to hold those thoughts. We have to take a quick break, and we will be right back. I'm Melissa Kane with Bill Finch here on WICC.
Let's find out what's on Bill's mind today. It's Wake Up with Bill Finch, live on WICC 600 and 95.9, the voice of Connecticut.
And we're back. This is Melissa Kane. You're going to find out what's on my mind as well as what's on Bill's mind this morning on Wake Up on WICC. We're talking this morning about what it is like to live in Washington, D.C. right now in the midst of what amounts to a military occupation and in the midst of massive federal layoffs. We're speaking with Maria Smith and Brian Muldoon. Those are their aliases, understandably. But Maria, we were talking, and Brian, we were talking about what it's like in neighborhoods where you have National Guardsmen, you know, walking down the street while people are sitting by their local sidewalk cafe. I would imagine that is, you know, distressing and discombobulating. But I want to ask another question about how the city has responded and how you feel about that. I mean, I think about Mayor Bowser and how she asked for the National Guard on January 6th. And
no response.
Nothing. No response whatsoever.
They let the mob kill a cop.
It's just unbelievable. But now
to overturn our election. Let's remind everybody.
Right. We cannot leave that out. And now we've got local elected leaders sort of right in the hot seat. How do you feel like they've responded or are responding? I mean, they're in a tough situation. Maria, we'll start with you.
Okay. Well, I think, you know, Muriel Bowser is in a tough position, right? And this morning, the Washington Post has a great piece analyzing the arrest records since the National Guard came in. And, you know, look, it's open containers, smoking marijuana in public, traffic offenses.
They became federal offenses, right?
These are, you know, they're minor things. And I think I come firmly, absolutely, from the camp that, you know, while the mayor has to, look, it's very hard for anyone. You don't know what this president is going to do. If she pushes back, what's next, right? Does he step it up? Does he declare a state of emergency and we get more? Right. So she's in a tough spot. But I'm, you know, firmly in the camp that this is federal overreach. We are doing nothing to address the root causes of crime here in D.C.
That's a really good point. That's a
Washington Post.
Right.
Says that
in fact, the end of so much of the federal monies and programmings that were going towards addressing root causes for crime just, you know, I think exacerbates everything. What concerns me as you're talking about these minor offenses becoming something that the federal government is responding to, is that it becomes part of this tinderbox of things escalating. I don't know if you've seen any of that, but sort of an escalating response. But I'd love to know if Brian has seen anything like that in his rides across the city.
Well, I wanted to back up for a second to what was said about, you know, 14th Street, whereas that's a shopping district.
Yeah.
You know, there's restaurants and all that up in the actual neighborhoods, because I'm in those a lot. There's nothing. You got people who are afraid to go out, like up in Adams Morgan, Mount Pleasant, because they're getting snatched, you know, by ICE, you know, going to work, you know, but there's no guards presence up there. But I just wanted to say that. But I'm sorry, what was the other question that you were asking?
Well, I wanted to know, honestly, what it felt like, and if you felt like there was an escalation, as Maria was talking about, you know, relatively minor offenses being targeted by the National Guard, targeted by the federal government, if you've seen an escalation in any violence as a result of that.
No, I haven't seen an escalation in violence at all. I mean, it's gone down. It was on the drop. I mean, yeah. I was down at DuPont yesterday just hanging out in the chairs. And you know, there was nobody drinking. All that element was gone. Mm. They've probably gone somewhere else, like in an alley. There, you know, the city doesn't smell like weed. But, you know, the violence here is not violence on tourists or professionals. It's all youth crime. It's, you know, you've got, you know, high dollar houses built around Section 8 housing. And those are, you know, the shootings, if you look at it, it's all 17-year-olds, you know, and younger. They're neighborhood beefs that are spilling out into the streets.
And you're saying the National Guard has nothing to do with that? They're not there trying to, I mean, that's not, that's,
no, they're not. I've never, you know, I go into Anacostia, they're not over at the projects over there. They're just in the high visibility areas.
And right. To be fair to the service members, they're not trained for this. You know, the people who are trained for this are the people that you deal with, Bruce, in your travels, the Metro Police.
Well, yeah, and they're all very friendly. I mean, I see them taking selfies with the tourists, or the tourists are taking selfies with them. You know, I mean, that whole part to me is a joke. I mean, it's just a flex, a show that does absolutely nothing. I mean, if you want to deal with crime in D.C., you have to deal with youth crime. And, sure. And, you know, I mean, a lot of the programs have gone away due to gentrification and, you know, funding and whatnot. But, you know, that problem is always going to be.
Well,
there.
I'll get a little partisan here just for a second. Democrats,
no.
Since Bill Clinton, have funded police departments. And the way we funded them is things like what Charlie Grady does with diversion programs. Everybody around here knows Charlie Grady, former FBI agent who works with kids, gets them off the street, early intervention before they become gangbangers and gang members.
Hang Time is the name of the program.
Hang Time, yeah. And those are the kind of soft things that don't make headlines, that don't have carbonieris and machine gun toting ICE agents who are all on steroids with masks and sunglasses and unidentified. Those are fear tactics that fascists always come forward with. And it's unfortunate that our president is taking playbooks out of fascist dictators and doing this sort of thing.
Rather than looking at what really
the root causes
of crime. To work.
Yeah. And how to save lives.
Absolutely.
Right? I mean, you know. Go ahead.
Brian. A lot of kids that are, you know, carjackings and shootings and all that, they're the ones who were in middle school and I guess not high school now when COVID hit. So, right. You know, there was never any mechanism put in place to deal with that either. So it's augmented, you know, it's like within the projects, it's a free for all. You got like people, hip hop artists in the projects who've got like 7-digit followers all over the world. You know, and then they get a bunch of money and they buy fentanyl and they wind up in jail. I mean, who's in the programs or in the projects trying to help those kids, you know, step out of that lifestyle?
Having been an elected official, I can tell you that it's very difficult to sell things that work because they're not as in your face. Usually they're much more subtle. They take longer time, but they're more effective.
Yeah, I am going to ask you all to hold those thoughts because we are ready for another break. It's Melissa Kane with Bill Finch and our guests from Washington, D.C. talking to us about what it's like to live there right now. We'll be back.
Oh, and guess what? We're not going to take the break right this minute. Sorry about that. Melissa had her back to the studio and the producer had to,
I'm sorry.
Is indisposed for a moment.
You know, I'm new at this. I think I need to be the one facing the producer.
Yeah, that's true. You're the one more in control here. But Brian Muldoon and Maria Smith, as I said, these are aliases because we don't want to get them in trouble. This president has a deep reach into the community to scare people and to intimidate them and whatnot. So we're using aliases. And Maria, Brian is a lifer sort of in D.C., and he rides his bicycle all over the city. He knows people. He goes to restaurants and clubs all throughout the city, knows people, knows the music scene. You're relatively new, but you're a social animal too. So you're out there, and it seems to me that no one would ever dream this pea soup up of disappearing people off the street, laying off hundreds of thousands of federal employees, having National Guard on the street all at once, if there wasn't some kind of ulterior motive here. What do you think it is?
Well, I don't know what the motive is.
Maybe no one knows.
No one knows what the motive is. I can tell you that D.C. has changed. I moved here in 2021, and the feel and the vibe has changed a lot since this administration took over. Starting, in January with mass layoffs of federal employees. This is a company town, and the company is the federal government.
And it's leaving. And we're going to have to...
I think it's my time now. I think now we're going to be taking a short break to hear from our sponsors. So hold those thoughts. We will be right back.
Fairfield County Talk for a Sunday morning. Wake Up with Bill Finch is live on the Voice of Connecticut, WICC 600 and 95.9.
We're back, and you are listening to Wake Up with Bill Finch and Melissa Kane. That's me. And we are talking with Brian and Maria, who are residents of Washington, D.C., about what is happening to their city. I want to pivot a little and talk about the massive layoffs that have happened from the federal government in D.C. over the last 6 months. I'd like to know, I was speaking with a few people from USAID over the last few weeks. I happen to be in the position to have to talk with a number of people who had recently been laid off from
USAID. Just
USAID.
To remind listeners, that's the United States arm of our government to help prevent worldwide disease and hunger. And we have been looked at as the provider of that. And we have backed away from that and no longer are looked at by the world as
Correct.
The leader to
it's,
fight
it's
disease
done.
And hunger.
It's gone. It's over. Our soft power.
It's incredibly embarrassing. While China builds roads and bridges and does medication, we back away.
We back away, and we destroy $10 billion of
pharmaceuticals
of contraceptives.
Yeah,
just this week, that we're destined.
The ripple effect of what Trump has done to USAID will be felt for generations to come.
It will, but specifically in Washington D.C., the people I spoke with who were D.C. residents were really somewhat in. I think it was a traumatic experience, and they were in a little bit of a state of shock, trying to figure out what was going to happen next. Now, all of these people were incredibly qualified and will no doubt get great jobs in the private sector somewhere.
We hope
somewhere. But in the city, the morale, what is it like being in the city? How does this affect the city? Do you, either of you personally know anyone or any people who have been laid off?
And are you going to stay?
That's another good one. Maria, you want to take this?
Sure. So I work for a nonprofit social services agency, and several of my coworkers have spouses or adult children who have lost their jobs. And if they haven't lost their jobs have become miserable. I have friends who work for the Library of Congress, for the SEC, for other nonprofits that were largely federally funded that have taken massive funding hits, that have had their work censored by this administration. And it's depressing. It's depressing to see, I know a young woman who was working for USAID, to see a young person at the very beginning of their career let go and not know what to do and feeling adrift. It's really sad.
Sad, and it's traumatic to many of these people.
And it's traumatic, and it's having an impact. There's a local brew pub that I go to, and one of the young women there is back waitressing full time because their federal funding was cut and her position was cut. And here's a young woman who's a published researcher who's waitressing 40 hours a week. And there is nothing bad about working in the service industry, but you can see the impact that it's having on her to have lost her job.
And Brian, I got to interject here. You've seen this from the street level. You've seen this as a messenger, a service employee. You've seen this as a professional. I don't want to get too much into your profession because I don't want to, you know, have anybody find out that Brian Muldoon is a secret agent or anything like that. But I do want to let you speak a little bit about how you feel. You're a lifer there. Well, what do you feel about your city? Where do you see it going? Tell us how you're feeling. I just can't imagine somebody's invested their whole life in the city, as I have in the city of Bridgeport. I can't imagine how you feel.
Well, you know, you feel kind of gloomy, you know? I mean, I'm not really affected, you know? My job is secure. I'm not an immigrant. And, you know, I'm not on the streets.
Speak anymore. English.
You know? And so, you know, like some of the neighborhoods that I bike in, I bike along the Anacostia River sometimes.
Oh, lucky you. Yeah, beautiful.
But it's all immigrants, you know?
Sure.
I mean, the whole, you know, families are all doing things, you know, they're playing soccer, you know, everyone's friendly and smiling. But now it's like everybody's got the 30-yard stare. There's not that many people. So, you know, I mean, a lot less traffic. So, I don't know how I feel. I'm kind of numb to it all, you know, because I've been through a lot here.
Yeah.
But,
yeah.
You know, I fear for you know, the communities, you know, what's going to happen to the people. But I see them coming together. Like if you go, you know, around, you know, say Tacoma Park, you'll see, you know, we support USAID. We love our troops. And, you know, the communities come together, I think, and they help their own. You know, and that's the kind of the way I see it here in D.C., you know, but my feelings are more for the people who are going through it. And, you know, it just leaves you like, you know, lump in your throat, pit in your stomach, you know, no hope.
Well, that is, I think, one of the goals of the people running the show down there is to divide us and give people fear. I'm sorry that you're going through this, both of you, Maria and Brian. I love going to D.C. I've been going there since I was 10 or 11. It's my home away from home. I remember when the subway system was being built. I was there for the Watergate hearings. I saw John Dean testify. I met my hero, Abraham Ribicoff, there. I've had so many fond memories, positive memories. I was there for Jimmy Carter's inauguration, Bill Clinton's inauguration, Barack Obama's inauguration. They were such uplifting events. They lifted us up. I remember when Jimmy Carter was being inaugurated and the city felt 6 inches off the ground. It really did. We went through this long national nightmare and there was Jimmy Carter saying that we're good people, we're going to survive this and we're going to make the country better. We don't get that from our leaders now. I hope maybe with the violence comes something good and we can get people on both sides of the aisle to force this president, who is a divider, he doesn't want to be a uniter.
It does feel like maybe, just maybe, there's a little shift this week with everyone other than our president, pretty much everyone acknowledging that the rhetoric has amped up this violence and it's got to be toned down. Perhaps we're at a turning point. I certainly hope we are. I like to ask this question, and I'd love to ask it super quick as we're running out of time, of both Brian and Maria. What's giving you hope for your city in this moment? You want to start, Maria?
Sure. I would say, as Brian said earlier, the people. Mm. People are coming together. I see it in just small ways. People passing around the resumes of people who've lost their jobs, doing what they can to help people. So I see that as, you know, giving me hope that we will get through this. And people talk a lot about what's going on. I think one of the things I love about DC is that everybody knows what's going on in politics and they talk about it. And it can be, you know, it can be depressing, but it can be energizing.
It sounds like it's a big city with a lot of really small, tight community feelings in it.
It seems, Brian, that one of the lessons from the past week is that we do need to love one another and listen to one another, despite the fact that people say horrible things. You know, I know that a little bit about your family, your extended family, my extended family. We're very sensitive to the issue of LGBTQIA+ rights. We have members of our family who are trans, and we feel very angry about the rhetoric from the right to deperson these people and to disappear our neighbors from other countries. Tell me how you feel about how we're going to move forward and how we're going to not disrespect people that we disagree with.
Well, I don't know how politically we're going to move forward, but as far as communities, you know, we're all targeted, you know, from trans to, you know, immigrants and all that, you know, and I think that those smaller cliques / communities, you know, my hope is that everybody will start coming together. And you know, I already see that when I'm around in the city. It's like, you know, you can say, you know, give a nod to a young kid and he'll give you a nod back. And, you know, I mean, people are friendly unless you step to them, you know. So, you know, I'd like to see, you know, us come together as a whole, you know, within D.C., and just kind of be there for each other. And I see that. I don't see that the hostility is towards, you know, other people, like maybe in other areas.
In the end, it's people coming together that will hopefully help us out of this. Well, listen, I want to say a huge thank you to Brian Muldoon and Maria Smith. Excuse me, Brian Muldoon and Maria Smith, who've been bringing us up to date on what is going on in D.C. And a huge thank you to all of you for joining us. I am Melissa Kane. So happy to be here with Bill Finch on Wake Up on WICC. And we will be back next week right here, same time. Have a wonderful Sunday.
On WICC, 600 AM and 95.9 FM.
The Voice of Connecticut. Stay engaged, stay strong.